It's been a pleasure to be with you this week, to enjoy getting to know some new folks and getting to be around the ones I already knew. And if you ever hear that Keith Mosier has apostatized, I don't want to see any of you ever again. Because I want you to go to heaven. And if I were to apostatize, I certainly would not be going there. Thankful to Sister Popejoy who gave me a whole box full of snacks for the next 3 months that I found in my motel room when I got there. Really grateful for that. Grateful for all of you who fed me this week. And I've got to go back and get on a diet again, of course. Grateful for that. Grateful to be with you. Hope you got something out of this study. There are DVDs available of this whole series on Romans that we did on Gospel Broadcast Network. They're asking you to donate to the Gospel Broadcast Network at least $50 to get one of those DVDs. And if you give them any more than that, they'll be happy to get that too. But they're using that DVD as a fundraiser. And I hope that many folks will study Romans. I think it's the most mistaught book in all of the Testament, and maybe the hardest book to understand in the Testament. I asked you last night to read 1 Corinthians 8, 1 Corinthians 10, and Romans 14. And I want you to look at Romans 14:1 with me as we get started tonight, studying a subject that I call scruples. Him that is weak in the faith, receive ye, the King James translation, but not to doubtful disputations. When you read the word faith in Romans, you have to be very careful of the context. Here's the word faith used to mean something that I believe about something that doesn't matter. If you look in Romans 14 there for a moment, you'll notice that Paul explains that he that is weak won't eat herbs, or only eats herbs. Paul's not talking about somebody who's weak in the faith, who's a brand new Christian maybe, or doesn't know much Bible. That's not his description. He's talking about someone who has a very fragile conscience about matters that really don't matter. Imagine if you had been a Jew in that day, and every seventh day, you were used to the fact that you couldn't do any servile labor, any unnecessary work. Now you become a Christian and that seventh day comes around again and you don't want to do any work still. Doesn't matter, Paul says, because one man esteems one day above another, or one man esteems all days alike, like a Gentile would. Gentiles and Jews probably didn't understand one another about Saturday. Probably got into big arguments. Well, you know how foolish it is not to work on Saturday. What's wrong with you? Well, I can't work on Saturday because I keep thinking about that old Sabbath day. And then they get into an argument about something that doesn't matter. And so Paul says, when you have a fragile conscience, don't argue about it at all. Don't even talk about it. Him that is weak in the faith, receive ye, but not in order to argue with him. Every time I teach on this subject, I have someone say, well, shouldn't they have convinced the Jews that it was all right to work on Saturday? No, Paul said, leave it alone. And right here in these things that don't matter is the biggest problem we have in the church today. How many of you could describe the difference between faith, opinion, and sight? Brother Michael, would you read for me tonight from the third chapter of the Gospel according to John, first verse? I'm going to interrupt you almost word by word here. All right, read nice and loud as if you were angry at your wife and shouting. Does he ever get angry and shout? Okay, he can do it then. She said yes.
The elder.
Not First John. The Gospel according to John.
Oh.
It's on page 287.
There was a
woman.
Man.
Woman.
Man.
That's a matter of faith. There was a man. He's awfully dogmatic, isn't he? There was a man of the Sadducees.
Pharisees.
Sadducees. No, Pharisees, right?
Pharisees.
That's what it says. Matter of faith. You say it's a Sadducee, I'm going to withdraw from you.
Pharisees.
It's what it says. Okay? Go on.
Name Nicodemus.
Name John.
Nicodemus.
Henry.
Nicodemus.
Gertrude.
Nicodemus.
Nicodemus, that's his name. He's a man, he's a Pharisee, named Nicodemus. Matter of faith.
Ruler of the Jews.
No, he was a ruler of the Gentiles. No?
Ruler of the Jews.
You're surely dogmatic.
Ruler of the Jews.
Okay, the same what?
This man came to Jesus by night.
Noon.
By night.
Noon.
By night.
Noon. I like noon better. I don't like to visit somebody at night. Now watch it. It's a matter of the faith that it was a man, that it was a Pharisee, his name's Nicodemus, and he came to Jesus by night. Is that right? Why did he come at night? Don't any of you ever dare answer that question. Because the minute you do, you're in the area of opinion, and it's right there where the argument starts in Sunday school class. I know why he came at night. He was afraid of the other... The Bible doesn't say that. Well, I know why he came at night. He worked late. The Bible doesn't tell us why he came at night. How many coins do I have in my hand? Well, say some number.
I don't know.
Oh, you don't know? That's your opinion? How many coins do I have? Six. Dennis, how many coins have I got? Three. Well, I have three different opinions. I don't know. Three and six. Now watch what faith is. Watch it. Watch it. I have no coins in my hand. Has anybody seen my hand open yet? No. But it's a matter of faith. Why is it faith? Because you have evidence from a competent witness that that's what it is. And that's what your Bible is. It's that kind of evidence that gives you faith that what they said, that's what it is. Those men died for what they wrote down there. If you want to study this in detail, read my book, The Book God Breathed. Because that's what that book's all about. The evidence for what books we have in the Bible and why we have them there. That's a matter of faith. I don't need to see it to know it. You want to see it? Didn't matter. You already knew it. You knew when I opened my hand. You didn't know, but you know now. First you were agnostic, and now you have faith. Okay? Okay. But in Romans 14:1, Paul's not talking about the faith. He's talking about believing something that doesn't matter. Let's get the background of this in 1 Corinthians 8. This was a problem troubling the early church because you had Jews who used to be not working on Saturday. Then you had Gentiles who had been eating meat offered to idols. And the Jews said, well, an idol's nothing. Why don't you just go ahead and eat the meat? So the Gentile would try it. It would bother his conscience. So he'd sin. Because he thought, well, that Jew must know what he's talking about. Let's see that in 1 Corinthians 8. Because they asked Paul about these things offered to idols. Now, as touching things offered unto idols, we know that we all have knowledge. Everybody has an opinion about this. You ask somebody about meat offered to idols, everybody's got an opinion. Ask somebody about Christmas, and everybody in the church has got an opinion. We don't have a verse on it. I walked into a class at the school one day, and these two boys were on the floor wrestling and punching one another. I finally got them separated. I said, what are you arguing about? They said, the date of the book of Revelation. I said, what verse? Now, I have a belief about the date of the book of Revelation, AD 96. But I don't have a verse on it. I'm guessing from some observation. But everybody's got an opinion. You know you should meet at 9:30 Sunday morning. Anything else unscriptural, right? You know we have our evening service at 1:30 at Forest Hill? One couple left because 6 o'clock is the scriptural time. Everybody's got an opinion about things that don't matter. Oh, Brother Dennis, we built the building at South Haven. And they saw the plans for it. It's a fan-shaped auditorium, and they had all these seats, and over here, and over here, and here came the sisters. All upset when they saw those blueprints. Where's the center aisle for weddings? And the elders had decided maybe the carpet should be red. I'll show you the sermon outline if you'll come in my office. I actually had to preach a sermon there on, is the red rug wrong? Listen to me tonight. I'm talking about what troubles elders all over this brotherhood. People's opinions that don't matter. I got a call just before I came up here today from Corner, Alabama. Devin Dean called me and told me about this lady that's all upset about something that doesn't even matter. I hear that all the time. Well, everybody has knowledge, but notice what he says about this kind of opinion. It puffs up. But charity edifieth. And if any man thinks that he knows anything about these things that don't matter, he doesn't know what he ought to know. That opinions don't matter. My opinion was, Scott, that you led two songs that pertain to this lesson tonight. Somebody else might say, I didn't like those two songs. You heard about that couple driving home one day, and the father said, you know, that wasn't much of a sermon, was it? And the mother said, no, and the song leading wasn't too good either. And the little boy said, I thought it was a pretty good show for the dollar we gave. Everybody's got an opinion. You did a great job, Scott. Now, I'm going to send you an application for the Memphis School of Preaching. Think you should come. All us good-looking guys got to be preachers. But if any man love God, here's the key, fellows and girls. The same is known of him. The reason I stood down here tonight is I wanted to treat this like I do a class at school. This is how I teach them, same way. As concerning, therefore, the eating of those things that are offered in sacrifice unto idols, we know something. An idol's nothing. What difference does it make if you eat the meat when the idol's nothing? But some people ate it, and all they could think about was the idol. Watch what he says. For though there be that are called gods, whether in heaven or earth, as there be gods many and lords many, but to us there is but one God, the Father, whom are all things, we in him, and one Lord Jesus Christ, by whom are all things, and we by him. However, there is not in every man that knowledge. For some, with conscience of the idol, unto this hour eat it as a thing offered unto an idol. Now watch him describe what he's talking about weak here. Their conscience being weak is defiled. It is my contention that I have to be responsible for other people's consciences because the Bible teaches me that. I'm not in a position to offend your conscience, but you're not in a position to offend mine either. Watch what he teaches here. But meat commendeth us not to God, for neither if we eat are we better, or if we eat not are we worse. I think I'd be better if I didn't eat so much, but take heed. Now watch it. Here's what I just said. Lest by any means this liberty of yours becomes a stumbling block to them that are weak. I can't act in such a way that I would lead a brother who has a weak conscience about this meat offered to idols into eating the meat. Went into a restaurant one night and the brother with us said, I can't come in here. Why? He said, they have a bar. I said, okay, we'll go somewhere else. I don't have a problem with that. I have to go to the grocery store and they sell beer. But if I wanted to get away from that stuff, I'd have to leave the world, 1 Corinthians 5. You know, I'd have to go out of the world. I can't do that. But he had a conscience about that. Okay, we'll go somewhere else. Ended up at McDonald's. Not my favorite place in the world, but he liked it. Now, for if any man see thee which hath knowledge, I don't think there's anything wrong with eating meat offered to idols. I don't think about idols. I'm not concerned about idols. But can you imagine a Gentile who came in the church who'd been doing that all of his life? Folks, I was converted out of a denomination. I brought a lot of denominational baggage with me into the church, and it took me years to understand a lot of things. We have to be very patient with each other in these areas. We have to quit forcing our opinions on each other. If it's the faith, let's fight for it. But if it's my faith, let's be careful whether it's the faith or my faith. Okay? And through thy knowledge shall thy weak brother perish for whom Christ died. But when you sin so against the brothers and wound their weak consciences, you sin against Christ. Wherefore, if meat make my brother to offend, I'm not going to eat any meat while the world stands. Why would I do that? Now, if I go someplace and he's not with me and he can't be tempted to do it, then I'm going to go eat that meat offered to idols. None of his business. If I want meat offered to idols in my house, it's none of his business. He's not supposed to be looking through the curtains anyway. But I can put him into a position, Paul says, where he'd be tempted. I don't want to do that. And so we'll go somewhere else. Now look at 1 Corinthians 10. That's a brother. But watch this. Here's somebody who's not a Christian who invites you to his house. What say I then? Verse 19. The idol is anything, or that which is offered in sacrifice to idols is any? Of course not. Doesn't matter. But I say that the things which the Gentiles sacrifice, they sacrifice to demons and not to God, and I don't want you to have fellowship with demons. It might be the case that it would be all right to go ahead and eat that meat, but I might put myself or someone else in a position where I would hurt his conscience and make it seem like I was doing what the demons do, what the devil does. I don't want to do that either. I can't get into a position where somebody is making my good evil spoken of. I have a problem at funerals when a denominational preacher leads the prayer. I never bow. Because I know that God's not listening to him. But Brother Case had a different opinion. He wanted to bow his head, he said, because he didn't want people to think he didn't pray. We never broke fellowship over that or even discussed it more than one time. It's a matter of opinion there. The way my conscience is about a matter that doesn't matter. You cannot drink the cup of the Lord and the cup of demons, so I don't want to be in a position where I'm letting my good be evil spoken of. You cannot be partakers of the Lord's table or the table of death. Did you folks hear me ask you the other night whether you would listen to my preaching if I had a cigarette dangling out of my mouth and a magnum of liquor up here? Would you listen to me? No. I can't act that way once I become a Christian, because I'm provoking the Lord to jealousy. When I start participating with what the world's doing, God says, what are you doing out there, Keith? You're in my family. You shouldn't be doing that. I have been told on more than one occasion, we couldn't come Sunday night because our family visited us. Think about that a while. What would be the better example to that family? All things are lawful for me. Watch it now. But all things are not expedient. What's it mean to be expedient? It doesn't carry out the Lord's purposes. So I ought not to do this. It would be right to do it, but in this instance, it would be wrong to do it. It's not expedient. All things are lawful for me, but all things edify not. Look over at 1 Corinthians 6 for a moment, and we'll get a Bible illustration of this point. He said it before, 1 Corinthians 6:12. All things are lawful unto me, but all things are not expedient. All things are lawful for me, but I will not be brought under the power of any. Those of you or us who struggle with drugs, notice what that said. Anything that controls me is not expedient. Now he says, here was their argument. Paul, meats for the belly and the belly for meats. He's discussing the fact that some of these brothers and sisters, maybe even, were going up on a hill where the temple of Diana was and consorting with harlots. And they argue with Paul, meats for the belly and the belly for meats. In other words, God made us to eat. God made us to do that other thing, so it's all right to do it. Paul said, no, because you have given up the power of your own body. And so, what's he mean when he says expedient? It might be lawful, but it's surely not going to get you closer to God if you do it. Now watch. Let no man seek his own, but every man another's. I've got to look out for your conscience. And then he says, now let's say you go to the meat market. That's what a shambles is. It's a meat market. You go down there, and there's this meat on the counter, and some of it's burned. And you ask the guy behind the counter, was this offered to an idol? Now you've created a problem for yourself. Paul said, don't ask. Asking no question for conscience sake. Why are you asking and creating a problem for yourself? It doesn't matter what that meat is. So here I've got another thought. I could create a problem for my brother in this matter of conscience. I could create a problem for myself. Leave it alone. Doesn't matter. I go down to the meat market now. Very seldom. Dorothy buys most of it. It's not burned. No idol meat there. Don't have that problem, do I? But if I ask the guy, where'd you get this meat? Well, we shot this illegal deer, Brian. Can do that. Wouldn't it be great to go to Brian's house and he said, hey, Keith, guess where I got this venison? I just shot him yesterday in the backyard. It's not deer season. Can't eat that meat. Now, I got this guy down the street, says, Keith, come to dinner. Look at verse 27. If any of them believe not, bid you to a feast, and you be disposed to go. Well, if you ask a preacher, he's going, isn't he? Whatsoever is set before you, don't ask him where he got it. Asking nothing for conscience sake. Not mine, his. If I'm his guest and I say, hey, where'd you get this meat? He's going to think I'm the most pompous and look down his nose fellow he's ever met. I remember when we were in Africa and they set this meat before me and I said, that's the most delicious beef I've ever eaten. And the missionary said, that's ostrich. Boy, that's Big Bird. I like that. That's good stuff, brother. Shouldn't have even asked, should I? But, well, he was a brother. I guess I could ask him. But if any man say unto you, now watch, I'm sitting at this unbeliever's table and he offers me this food and he said, Keith, guess where I got it? That's meat that was offered to an idol. I can't eat it. I can't. Not for my sake, his, because he's testing me. He must think it's wrong to eat that meat. Watch what Paul says. And for conscience sake, conscience I say, not yours, the other one. For who is why is my liberty judged of another man's conscience? He's testing me. He wants to know something. He must already think it's wrong to eat that, and he's testing me. I held a meeting on one occasion. On Sunday, I was invited to an elder's house for dinner. I went, and he wasn't there yet, and I saw this lady cooking, and I said, ma'am, I don't believe I met you this morning. She said, no, I'm the elder's wife. I've been spending the morning cooking for you. Meeting ended because I couldn't eat that dinner. I'm not as important as the Lord is. You don't stay out in the kitchen cooking for Keith when you're supposed to be worshiping the Lord. And even my own conscience told me, you can't eat that dinner. So, conscience. Notice what we're studying. Now go to Romans 14. Romans 14. Him that is weak in the faith. Are you understanding what that means now? What? Oh, keep going. Thought you wanted me to quit. It's almost time. For one believeth that he meet all things. That's Michael Bonner. Another who is weak eats herbs. Yeah. We talked about that today at lunch. You know, when the world was first created, everybody was a herbivore. Even the animals, the tigers, the lions, all, there were no carnivores until man sinned. And then meat began to be eaten. Well, here's a guy that came along and said, what do they call them, vegans now? Vegetarians, vegans? He said, I'm a vegetarian. I can't eat any meat because every time I think about meat, it's been offered to an idol. He can't even eat a hamburger now. Well, they didn't have hamburgers back then, but he can't eat one. And Paul asks an important question here. What difference does it make? Who art thou that judgeth another man's servant? He serves God, not you, Keith. I might think, that's the silliest thing I ever heard, that you can't eat meat offered to idols. I'm not his judge or his boss. Look over at 1 Peter 4 with me for a moment. Peter warned us about something. But let none of you suffer as a thief, a murderer or a thief or an evildoer. Now watch this. Or a busybody in other men's matters. Start counting with me from the word or there. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I counted 8 words. Or a busybody in other men's matters. That's one word in the Greek. That word in the Greek is episkopos anthropos. Who made you another man's bishop? Nobody. Nobody. I'm not anybody's bishop. We have a group of bishops in the church, and when they're together and make a decision, it's final if it's in the air of expediency. Let me say this clearly tonight. It's not part of the sermon really, but it is. Listen to me. Elders do not rule in the air of opinion. Please mark that down and keep it in your back of your minds. They don't rule. Nobody rules in the air of opinions. When elders make a decision, it has to be an expediency. That is, it has to expedite a law already stated by God. God said, meet on the first day of the week. He never did tell us what time. So when the elders decide 9:30, 10:30, and 5, I'm going to be there. In fact, if they told me to be there every day, I'd be there, because I have to obey them that have the rule over me. For they watch for my soul as those that must give an account. Hebrews 13:17. But they do not rule in the air of opinion. When elders start to force their opinions on a congregation, they're lording it over God's heritage. Peter warned against that. But when the elders make a decision based on a thus saith the Lord, and how do I carry it out, I better obey that. Otherwise, I'm disobeying God. They are the delegated authority in the local churches, and they rule in the area of expediting God's law. But with these matters that don't matter, I'm not his boss. He doesn't want to eat that meat offered to idols. If he wants to be a vegetarian, great. That's wonderful. What about this one? One man esteem one day above another. Another esteemeth every day alike. I know a couple that has a conscience problem with December 25th being a time for the family to get together and exchange gifts. They have a real conscience problem with it. So they exchange their gifts on Thanksgiving Day. Excuse me, but I find that kind of illogical. What difference what day you do it? But their conscience is such because when they were in the denominational world, what was December 25th? His actual birthday. Our master was born in August, not December. Oh yeah, the shepherds were out in the field with their flocks, were they not? It's not December 25th in the wintertime, folks. In fact, Jesus is 6 months younger than John the Baptizer, his cousin. And Zechariah's course was such that when he went home and they conceived John, and that Jesus was born 6 months later, that's August. And so I have an idea he was born sometime in what we call our summertime. But they were all upset about December 25th. It just bothered them because they learned that's not his real birthday. Because in the denomination where they were, that was a big celebration, Christmas, wasn't it? We call at our house Christmas Greed Day. Because all of the children ask, what are you getting for Christmas? And that's what you're giving. I remember my daughter one time sitting in the wrapping paper. I mean, it was almost up to her neck. And she looked up at me and she said, is that all? I went in and talked to Dorothy. I said, we got to do something about that. I said, I think I've got an idea. I went back in and I said to the three of them, which one of those gifts do you like the very best? And they showed it to me. I said, you're giving that one away. And they did that year. That only works 1 year. You know what they'll tell me next year? Yeah. Conscience, folks. Uh-oh. I'm sorry, honey. I heard a boy one time was saying to everybody when he was being carried out, pray for me. We lived in the orphans' home of the Wooddale Church of Christ when I went to Memphis to go preaching. And in that home, it was a five-bedroom big house, had a winding staircase. And one of my classmates wanted me to do his wedding, and he had an imagination of his wife-to-be walking down there. Dorothy went to work, and I mean that reception table, coffee pot, all those little peanuts and whatever they put on there. Just beautiful. This boy walks in the door, sees the coffee pot, and threw a fit. I don't drink coffee. Christians don't drink coffee. I'm thinking, well, I drink coffee, but I don't let it make a fool out of me. He had no business doing that. If he doesn't drink coffee because of caffeine, he needs to quit eating lettuce too. It's got a lot of caffeine in it. But that may be his reasoning, that he thought it was a drug. But he had no business saying that. See, he came in as a weak brother in the conscience of the coffee and tried to lord it over us. Can't do that either. Now, had I known that he didn't like it, we wouldn't have had the coffee pot. It would have been a simple problem solved. But he caused a problem where Paul said, don't you dare do that. You receive him, but don't stand there arguing with him. He that regards the day regards it to the Lord. See, this thing in our minds is so strong that we're doing it to God. I can't eat that meat because it will make me wrong with God. That's my conscience. It doesn't matter whether I eat it or not, really. It doesn't matter whether I regard one day above another or not, really. But some folks have conscience problems here over so many things in the church. Dress. I'll tell you a big one, thee and thou in prayer. We've got some brothers and sisters that think if you don't use thee and thou in prayer, you're sinning. And they always use it. There's nothing in the scriptures that teaches that, except that the old time preachers taught it and hurt their consciences about that matter. How long at one congregation before they put the songs on the overhead? Because some were conscientiously objecting to it. They'd always used a song book, didn't want to look up at that thing. Actually, now that we use the overhead at Forest Hill, the singing's better. Because everybody's looking up, got his throat open so he can project his song. You know, when you're down here, incidentally, you did a good job. When you're leading singing, pick that song book up. That's exactly right. It opens up your mouth there. Sorry about that. That's what you learned in Memphis group. Now here's verse 8. This is very important and I'll quit. For whether we live unto the Lord, and whether we die unto the Lord. Whether we live, therefore, or die, we're the Lord's. Let's answer to the Lord over this, not each other. And these matters of opinion, for it's too long now, from the beginning of the church until tonight, have gotten us into trouble. Let's read the end of the chapter now. For meat, verse 20, destroy not the work of God. All things indeed are pure, but it is evil for that man who eats with offense. Conscience. Your conscience has to be trained, folks. It's like the umpire in a baseball game who has to follow the rules he was given. And your conscience can only tell you whether you broke the rules you gave it. And those who get trained by the Word of God make their decisions based on that, not their own consciences. Conscience is a terrible guide in matters of religion because itself has to be trained. Now watch what he says. It is good neither to eat flesh nor to drink wine. See, I didn't go into that place that brother didn't want to go. That's what Paul teaching me. Nor anything whereby thy brother stumbleth or is offended or is weak. Hast thou faith? Here's Paul's command. Hast thou opinions about these things? Keep it to yourself. Is that what it says? Michael, what's it say? Have it to thyself. Keep it to yourself. Don't be arguing with your brother about it. And every time I teach these three chapters, some of my students say, well, don't you think there comes a time when we should be able to convince that guy's already eat that meat? No. You never get into that area if you're a Christian. I want you folks to get your ears trained scripturally so you know when a preacher's not teaching you the truth. We've got a lot of preachers who stand in pulpits and force their opinions on us about how long is and how short is. In the 1970s, when the hippies were around, Brother Elkins always described a hippie. This preacher was trying to perform a wedding of these two hippies, and he got to the end and said, will one of you please kiss the bride? Well, they all had long hair, didn't they? So I saw all kinds of articles on the sin of long hair on men. Do you remember those articles? That comes out of 1 Corinthians 11, where the Bible says, doth not nature itself teach you that long hair is a shame unto a man? He didn't mean the way we're born, folks. He didn't mean that. If he meant it the way we're born, the way I'm born, I have to get my hair cut to keep it short. That's nature. What's he mean by nature there? The custom in Rome, Corinth. The custom in Rome, in Corinth was short hair. He says, doesn't the custom there teach you that? So what did we see? We wasted thousands of dollars of the Lord's money on long hair is a shame unto a man. I think it's just a mess. I don't know about being ashamed. I don't want to take care of it. If you like it, fine. I'll tell you why all those boys had it. Their girlfriends liked it. But it's not a scriptural issue. We had an issue in the brotherhood here just a few years ago on women translators. Brother Woods had already written an article in 1979. It was in the Gospel Advocate showing us that a translator is just a microphone. If he or she is a translator, she starts preaching, that's a different story. But a translator is supposed to just repeat what it is I'm saying or the preacher's saying. Those guys never made the right argument either. And I am proud to say I stopped that thing in the brotherhood. And I did it at our lectureship. I was able on one of our open forums to get up and ask those preachers a question. I said, have you ever quoted the Apostle Paul as saying, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me? Yes, sir. I said, he never said that. Paul wrote in Greek, not English. You're quoting the translator as saying, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. Now, is the authority in the translator or Paul? Is the authority in the preacher or the translator? And that's the last time I heard an argument ever made about women translators. And if we're going to make an argument, let's make it scripturally. And let's be very careful about our opinions. When I was at the local graduate school, they had an opinion about the gospel plan of salvation. And they told us it was a waste of time to offer it every time we met. That's not an opinion. That's unscriptural. What did the gospel preachers do? They taught the people what to do to be saved. And I want you to know what to do to be saved tonight. I've been talking about that, and this isn't a matter of conscience. This is a matter of something Jesus taught. Jesus said, he that believes, what? That he died, was buried, and rose again the third day, and is baptized, shall be saved. Jesus said that if we don't confess him before men, he won't confess us before his Father, which is in heaven, Matthew 10:37. Tonight, if you're not a Christian, listen to Jesus. He that believes and is immersed shall be saved. It's at the point of immersion in water when you're buried with him, and as you come up out of that water, God takes away all your past sins and does not do it before then. Baptism is essential because it's the act in which you place yourself in his hands and declare that the operation of God is effective. He will take away your sins. Christians, let's be careful about our opinions. They cause more problems in churches than anything else I have. I get more calls about these things. So-and-so said this, and so-and-so argued that, and so-and-so got his feelings hurt, and on it goes. Those things don't matter. The book matters. God matters. Christ matters. The Holy Spirit matters. Those things don't matter. If you'd like us to pray with you tonight, we'll do that too while we stand and while we sing.
Someday you'll answer.